Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up in about 15 minutes, we'll talk about carpooling in New York and why people don't seem to do it in the New York metro area like they do in parts of California. So we have a segment question on our website that you can start posting to right now. Go to the one that says going solo and ask, would anything get you to carpool? That's it. Would anything get you to carpool? Go to WNYC.org, click on Brian Lehrer Show, and you'll see that segment, and tell us, would anything get you to carpool? Meanwhile, at a press conference on Friday that you may have missed, these things always happen on Friday, so they wind up in the weekend papers that you don't read, New York City Police Commissioner Ray Kelly told reporters that the spat between him and Attorney General Michael Mukasey is over. Maybe you didn't know that there was a spat about FISA, the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act. The fight was made public in a series of letters between the two men that came to light last month. WNYC's Bob Henley has been following this with implications for security and civil liberties in New York. WNYC's Bob Henley is here now. Hi, Bob.
Good morning.
Give us the background of this. What was specifically the disagreement between Ray Kelly and the Bush Justice Department?
Well, I guess there's a very exhaustive Wall Street Journal lead editorial today that lays it out pretty well. Basically, back in June and September, the city made application through the Department of Justice for the FISA court, which is a reform that was put into place. It's a secret court put into place after the church disclosures. I date myself once again. Back in the 60s and 70s, it was discovered that domestic and overseas intelligence engaged in actions that may have been illegal, targeting foreign leaders, doing all kinds of stuff, going around the country, making mischief with the late Martin Luther King. And so this reform was put into place where people that had an emergent issue could make their proofs before the secret court and keep things at least before a court when it came to intelligence matters. So the concern was, on the part of Commissioner Kelly, that this was not being dealt with in an expedient fashion, that in the last few months, Department of Justice was sitting on these applications. The city can't make them directly themselves to the FISA court. And so these letters surfaced. What was interesting, of course, this was all happening right around the time that Commissioner Kelly was being contemplated to have Homeland Security, which, of course, went to Governor Napolitano.
Right, in terms of the Homeland Security Secretary position under President-elect Obama. But does the translation of that mean the NYPD wants more wiretapping with less oversight?
Well, I was talking with, we asked Commissioner Kelly after a Mumbai press conference, and hopefully we'll talk about that a little bit later, where there was an intel briefing from detectives on the ground from the NYPD in Mumbai for hundreds of private security experts who are really quite concerned, because the big lesson coming out of Mumbai isn't automatic weapons, it's the status of private security. People really need to keep in mind that that's the thing. These soft targets are protected here in the U.S. by usually low-paid and transient security workers. But anyway, afterwards, Kelly took questions, and I asked him about this exchange between Mukasey and Kelly, and this is what he had to say.
Yes, we believe the system has responded. It's in my judgment, acting more efficiently. It's operating much quicker than it had been in the past. So we're satisfied with the progress that's been made.
So, Bob, what I take from that clip is that Kelly says the NYPD and the Justice Department are now on the same page, but that Wall Street Journal editorial today calls for Mukasey to yield to Kelly's requests for more wiretapping. So was this statement by Kelly on Friday just a PR move, or did the Department of Justice really change its policy in some substantive way to make wiretapping easier for the NYPD?
The NYPD is declaring victory on this one. They think that they came out on top of this. And, of course, this goes central to one of the major questions that's going to face the Obama administration. You know, then Senator Obama went back and forth on this whole question of FISA and wiretapping, ultimately coming down on the side of the grand compromise with Speaker Pelosi, which a lot of civil libertarians were concerned about. There's really behind the scenes right now in Washington a lot that's going on with the Bush administration trying to memorialize and concretize, if you will, changes in how things are done so that actually things can be more expedient in terms of being able to put people under surveillance. And so this is going to be one of the top issues. And this is also gets back to the whole question of whether or not 7 years out from the start of the war on terrorism, do we consider it more of, as the Rand Institute suggests, we consider it reconsider it as a criminal thing that requires investigation, or do we continue the so-called war on terrorism approach?
Well, I mean, it's almost incredible to think that the city of New York is asking the Bush Justice Department. I mean, we're talking about the Bush administration here, famous for the so-called warrantless wiretaps and trying to do this, you know, in a greatly expanded way, and that the Bush administration is being I don't know if civil libertarian is the right word, but you know, maybe so, compared to the city of New York, because it seems as though in his letters to the Attorney General, Kelly was arguing for lowering the threshold of probable cause that the NYPD needs to prove in order to wiretap. So who is it that Ray Kelly wants to wiretap, and how much probable cause is he seeking to have eliminated?
I think you have to go back to a report that the NYPD Intelligence Division came out with looking at the homegrown terrorist threat, which we talked about on your show. Mm-hmm. And the idea there is, you know, we have this construct that we haven't been hit here. I'm sure you heard it throughout the campaign. We haven't been hit here. That was kind of an endorsement, if you will, of the Bush-Cheney threat matrix. Now, however, if you broaden the definition of, well, what is here to include Mumbai, Madrid, London, all places I'd love to visit, one I did visit, then we have been hit. And so I think that what we're seeing here is that Kelly's keeping this sense of urgency because they have these forward-deployed NYPD detectives. And their attitude is, you know, and he did this report looking at these homegrown terrorist threats and how they have cropped up on the radar. And it was the first, I'll give them credit, exhaustive analysis of all of these local plots that we really haven't seen that showed up in places as far away as Canada, Australia, London. And one of the common denominators, again, according to the NYPD intelligence folks, is that the people that got involved in them were recruited over the internet. In other words, it's like the new, you know, cyber training is equivalent to what used to be getting your terrorist training card stamped in some part of Pakistan. And so they said very clearly in this report that there needed to be a national dialogue about these constitutional standards because often, according to them, you'd have to put people under surveillance who had done things like gone to a Muslim bookshop or had some kind of association with individuals who might theoretically have supported a group that financed terrorism. And they admitted, you know, academically that there would be tentative kind of connections, but they said in this age of this cyber connections, you needed to be proactive. And this may sound very familiar to what we heard from Professor Dershowitz regarding the ticking time bomb thing about when we employ, you know, torture. So this debate is just rolling forward. And, of course, the Mumbai thing does, you know, ratchet up the pressure.
Do you think that the attacks in Mumbai serve to get the Justice Department and the NYPD on the same page with this agreement?
You know, there's such a mix of legacy conflicts here. I mean, also keep in mind there was a changeover of personnel in, you know, the whole joint terrorism thing had a certain kind of social ecology that was working. That's the interface between the city and the federal government. There's a lot of turnover. You had some experienced people leaving. So sometimes bad personality things, it can be like the subject of law and order, that traditional almost tribal tension between the city and the federal government can crop back up. I think that there's no doubt that the real takeaway here is how much vulnerability there is in this country because so much of our places of mass assembly, hotels and hospitals, are protected by the exploited private security workforce that we've reported a lot on WNYC. These are the unsung heroes who often work for minimum wage, have no health care benefits. And in the case of Mumbai, some of these private guards just like took off because they did a threat analysis and there was no esprit de corps. There was no training. And so that's really where we need to focus now. You know, if President-elect Obama wants a work progress administration, the idea of making those jobs have some dignity, like the TSA, might be something they should consider.
Let's take a phone call. Amit in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Hi, Amit.
Hi, Brian. Thank you very much for taking my call. Kind of honored.
Sure thing.
I just wanted to say, as a former Marine and a former severely underpaid security guard, that I definitely appreciate the need for their support. And I also want to speak to the M4 assault rifles. I think it's important that first line of response NYPD officers have that kind of firepower. Now, I've got a lot of problems with the way NYPD trains and equips their men to begin with, but I definitely think that's a tool in the toolbox that's very necessary, and I think Mumbai proves that.
Bob?
Yeah, well, there was, I have to say that the description by the NYPD detectives in Mumbai that was teleconferenced in was really stunning. Despite the fact that the Mumbai train network had been hit quite severely just a few years ago, of the 50 police officers on the ground in Victoria Station, half were unarmed. The rest of them had inadequate rifles and handguns. So there, I think there is something to be said about the forward deployment of ESU officers who get an additional 6 months training with heavy weapons around the city. But I can't vouch for the post reporting. I really can't. I don't know. I do know that the commissioner was asked directly about the question of the matching the firepower, and he felt that this, the way that he's been deploying his assets, that Mumbai showed that he'd done the right thing.
So, Emmett, you like this direction that they're taking? And again, for people who haven't seen it, the cover story in the New York Post today, headline, Machine Gun Kelly, Arms for Our Own Mumbai. And it says, in the aftermath of the Mumbai terror attacks, Police Commissioner Ray Kelly has come out with guns blazing with a plan to get all 1,000 rookie cops ready to use heavy artillery in time for New Year's Eve. The Post has learned that ultimately more than 3,000 cops will be trained to use high-powered machine guns.
Brian?
Well, I'd argue that they're not machine guns. They are not high-powered compared to some of the stuff that's out there. What they are is necessary, and I'm not gonna say I like it. I just think it's necessary. And I also would like, I don't think you can rely on ESU to be there all the time. Last time I checked, and I could be completely wrong, but last time I checked, there were 400 members of ESU, and it's way too much weight on way too many good shoulders for a city this size.
Emmett,
I think the firearms training standards need to go up, and I think that's indicated by these increased threats and the constant horrible shootings that you see of mistakes made in the hail of gunfire and too many shots, too few hits.
Emmett, thanks for chiming in. Call us again.
Brian, I do also have an update. I just got a response to the Post story from the NYPD saying it has nothing to do with New Year's Eve, and rookies assigned that night will be armed only with sidearms as usual, so we can stand down and reduce our blood pressure.
Probably it just meant that they wanted to get the training done by the end of the year, right?
Well, I think what they wanted to do is get them familiar with the weapons. But, I mean, the thing here is that to make a place safe is a community effort. It really requires collective effort. That means not wearing your iPod in mass transit all the time, because you may be the first responder. If people are really concerned about this, you know, your safety is not just a job of the police department. It's your job. It's a civic responsibility. So perhaps to be a little engaged with your surrounding environment, you might save a life and it might be your own.
All right. WNYC's Bob Henley, reporting on these latest developments with the NYPD and counterterrorism work. Thank you very much. Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up next, why New Yorkers seem to never carpool while Californians do. And we've got a question page on our website. What would make you carpool, if anything? Go to WNYC.org and click on Brian Lehrer Show.